Hi Nathan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Full of busy as always. You?
Yeah, I'm good. To be honest, I was a little bit stressed, but you know what helped calm me down and make me all happy?
Was it family history research?
It might have been, yes. I didn't even find it anything exciting. It was just the sheer orderliness and like calmness of just methodically doing something.
I get that. It, like I say, it's structure and calm, isn't it? It's like there's so much chaos, and then you find your order. So what have you been doing then?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute, but do you think we should introduce ourselves?
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
Yes, my name is Helen Tovey, and I'm editor of Family Tree. And who are you?
I think I'm Nathan Ward. Hello there.
I think you are, yes. So, what have I been doing? So, I have amazingly been doing my plan, and my plan was to go back through all the people and the records that I've collected but haven't added to my tree. And I've started doing that. And so far, I've just added one person and I've added seven documents. So part of me is like, go me. Like, I'm the opposite of not having enough sources. I'm painstakingly slow on adding the people. The worst document that I found, guess how long so I found this, I've been adding these seven documents. The oldest document that I hadn't added to my tree, guess how long I'd had it for before not adding it to my tree?
Oh, I don't want to guess. 20 years?
Well, not that bad. 9 years.
Thank you.
So I have added other things, obviously, in the meantime, but you know when you're doing stuff and something's not a priority thing at the time, and then that was my worst one.
Right. So how have you gone about adding that to your tree then? So this is a document that's not on, you don't use Ancestry. This is a document that's not on your platform that you're using.
So when I do my research, then I do love Ancestry and I do use Ancestry, and it is probably the main place I look for stuff, and Scotland's people as well. But because I'm getting information from lots of different places, it might be Google, you know, all sorts of places, National Archives, stuff like that, then I will download stuff into a folder, and each thing I download, I'll give it the surname first, and then I'll say what it is, like so the surname, first name, the date of the event, so somebody died, what it is, death certificate, where I got it from, so whether it was Scotland's people or GRO or whatever. So I give the file name a pretty useful file name, so I know what the heck it is, and I just save it into a folder, and then at some point I add them to my family tree maker. But obviously the some point can drag on a bit. Yeah.
9 years.
Yes, so that's what I do. So I just stuff it all in a folder, and the folder is called, because I'm a very forgetful person, the folder is called to be added to family tree maker, so that I know that everything in that folder needs to be added to family tree maker. So it is actually quite logical.
Yeah, that's cool. That now makes more sense. That's what you're about methodical and organized.
Yeah, and so I have my big folder called my family history. Then within there, I have lots of different project folders. So it might be a project about a surname, or project about a place, or project just about a little brick wall that I've got, whatever it is. And then I also have a folder which is just research, kind of admin. And in there, I have my main research log, like my overview research log. I have this folder of documents I need to add to Family Tree Maker. And I have some other stuff. I can't even remember what it is, but because it is methodical. So luckily, it doesn't matter if I can't remember, because when I see it, I go, oh yeah, got
That's good then. That's good that you can just go to it whenever you need to.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, what the heck's this?
This is where I found this interesting. So the document from 2016 that I randomly hadn't added was for one of my, I can't remember, three times great-grandpa's death certificate. And on there, the informant was his son-in-law. And so that's my, and it's not my, this person's wife isn't my direct ancestor. It's a great-great-great auntie or whatever, great-great auntie. And I hadn't added her husband. And I was like, oh, if this had been Nathan, he would have added the husband. So I hadn't added the husband to my tree. Because all the things I tell you to do, like make your tree, add in all the side branches, some of them do, some of them don't. Yeah. And they only were added him in, John McGregor. He's now added to my tree. And I felt like I was copying you a bit and getting a nice, more substantial tree.
Be more Nathan.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe not. I was going on a night out on this weekend on Saturday. Just got myself, glammed up, ready to go out, have a good time. And I got a text message from my friend Helen, who I run with, a different Helen. I know more than one Helen. Anyway, and it was a picture of her family tree at 9.8. on the tree rating. I almost cancelled my night out. It ruined my day.
Yeah.
Like, I need to go back and sort this out on beta. So,
Do you think there's a correlation? Because if you're both like runners and you're potentially competitive people, and so it's that competitive vibe goes across your whole life.
Maybe. I mean, I think I'm definitely competitive because now I want to beat 9.8 or at least match it, because I think beating 9.8 is going to be hard. But I think runners are quite stubborn and single-minded, aren't they, in how they approach things, because we've just got to get to the end of that run and nothing gets in our way. So yeah, maybe there is some sort of weird methodology there from...
And also, runners, you have to get to the end of the run. So in the moment, you have to have a lot of determination to get through pain barriers and stuff like that and to keep going fast. Then you have to commit to a training program. You can't just turn up for one run and go, right, I'm going to run it as fast as I can. You have to have the consistency factor, don't you?
We're all stubborn. We're all a little mad. It's silly.
These are good qualities for doing family history.
Oh, dear.
So my main question is, so she's got this fantastic score on her ancestry tree. Did you pick her brains or were you too busy sulking?
Oh, I was in a right sulk. I was like, I sent her some nice messages. Oh, well done. Aren't you great? But there was a sarcastic undertone. It really did make me think I'm not going out tonight. I need to go back and get my tree sorted. I haven't done yet. But yeah, no, it's cool. It's great. I am chuffed for her. But
you didn't ask her. Well, next time you see her, can you ask her from me, what does she do to make her tree score so good?
Well, do you know what? She doesn't even have a research log. So it's just appalling, really. I don't know how she got to 9.8. So I'll give her respect for the 9.8, but we'll I'm shouting out that she hasn't got a research log. Revenge is mine. Cool.
Well, I guess theoretically, if you could remember everything, you wouldn't need a research log. So she could have a fantastic tree. She could have added lots of sources. She could have analysed why she thinks the things that she thinks. Mm. It'll be completely correct and excellent.
Just really methodical as you build a tree to the point where you don't need it.
I just think the research log, I think most of us in our lives are really busy and we come back to things. And that I've said it so many times, if I don't write it down, then I feel in a panic and I feel like I've wasted my time, and I probably have wasted my time because I'm going to forget it. When I write it in my research log, or if I have my organised folders, like what I just said, it doesn't matter. 9 years can go by and I just go to where the place is and I just pick up that document and I know exactly what I'm supposed to do with that document. That's pretty handy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really, really useful and reassuring.
Before I met you, Nathan, that's how long ago it is.
Wow.
Yeah, or about the time. I've been working at this company for about 9 years.
Right, okay. Oh, now you're stuck with me.
Now I'm stuck with you, yes.
This isn't a weird one, but I realised how lost I was in my own tree the other day. So, obviously, I was doing this thing for Marianne Taylor, finding out about her husband's blah, 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 blah. Finding out all that, untangling that mess, which I did. And I think I was saying to you, right, I'm going to move on now. I'm going to go to my Scottish ancestors and do that. It's the same part of the tree. And I was just so lost in this one little mystery that I'd lost the idea of where they were within the positions on the tree. So I thought my Scottish ancestors were on a completely different branch. Turns out it's the same branch. So that's where I'm staying now.
Brilliant. So have you found any clues which point to places in Scotland yet?
No, I haven't. I think I mentioned to you last time, I had one gap on the Mary and Taylor tree where she wasn't on the 1991 or 1981 census. I can't remember which one now.
1881.
1881, yes, not 1981. She'd be really old now. I can't find her on the census. She had lots of, it was the 1891 census. She's missing from it. I can't find her. The 1891 census is the year after her husband dies, but before she marries my great-great-granddad. And she has loads of children with the guy that died. John Briggs or James Briggs or Thomas Briggs. That's his name. Wow. I've had too much sleep, apparently. So I can't find her. So she should be in a house with lots of children. And the only reference I found that I thought was her, she was still with Thomas Briggs, who at that point was dead. So that's a little bit terrifying if that still is her. I just can't find her. And then I've done what you said and tried to find the children. But that isn't working for me. I can't find them either. So it's a little bit of a family history mystery. But equally, I'm like, do I ever really need to know where she was then? It's, but I'm intrigued why I can't find it. It might just be me doing bad research.
Any time. It could be any of us doing bad research. It could be that typical, like there's a small error in the transcription of the surname, for instance, which is making the whole family not findable. Or it could be the enumerator's at home. He's busy copying over the forms that each household's given him into his summary book, and one of his kids falls over. He goes to help pick the kid up. He comes back to his desk and starts at the wrong place with completely the wrong surname. Yeah, anything could happen, couldn't it? Yeah, you say you don't need to find this. What, this is an ideal thing. If you feel like it's a bit of a distraction, for putting it into your research log, and I have a column which is like to do next time. So that means you can kind of park a situation. It's a column over on the right-hand side of my research log because I have it on an Excel sheet. And I go to do next time and I go to find out where Marianne Taylor Briggs, whoever, was in the 1891 census. And I'll say, I've tried searching on her in England. I've tried searching on her children in England. And I'd say whether there are any possible contenders. And then you can just park it, put a date, whatever today's date is, and then in 9 years' time, you can come back to that and you know what you've done and you can start doing it again if it feels like it's not central to your purpose at the moment.
Yeah, I think exactly that, because I was doing it. It was a day I felt a little bit tired and I was like, I'm taking too much for granted here in the terms of my research. You know, when you're not on tip-top research form, and I was like, I felt like I'd willingly be taking hints that might not be correct. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't want to damage my tree score. And I spent a couple of hours looking for this missing census record. And I'm like, I could have actually just found somebody else on my tree and progressed them further back. But I just wanted to fill this gap in. So it is unnecessary, but because it's given me a little mystery, I'm intrigued by it, even though it could be really boring.
Give us a little tiny fact file, just a quick summary of Marianne, her date and place of birth, the first names of her children, and where you found her in the census before that and the census after that. Because then me or one of the listeners, it's like, you know, when there's a jigsaw puzzle somebody can't do, or a baby which won't stop crying, all of that thing. Everyone wants to have a go and see if they can solve the situation.
Okay. I'll give you the basic facts then.
Yeah.
So Marianne Taylor, born on the 21st of October, 1856, in Thornton, Yorkshire. Married on the 27th of October, 1877, to Thomas Briggs. Then we've got birth of daughter Alice Briggs in 1878. That's an approximation. I haven't actually dug out any information on her. Followed by 1882, birth of daughter Ada Briggs. Followed by 1890, death of husband Thomas Briggs, still in Thornton. And that's where she disappears.
Okay, I like it. I like it. What a cliffhanger. Okay, so maybe me or maybe someone else, we'll all have a go and maybe one of us will get lucky. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, she goes back in 1898 and gets married to my great-great-granddad. My mum sent all this information to my great-aunt, who is, she's the daughter of Vernon Wood, who's the son of Thomas Wood. I'm really terrible at the generational naming. Anyway, she didn't quite believe my untangling. She was still convinced about these three marriages, but it ain't happening. But then she started sending me loads and loads of pictures of these people. So I've actually...
Oh, wonderful.
I've got some really cool ones. She's unfortunately photographed them at jaunty angles, but there's some great like walking pictures with very big like woolly socks and things like that. They're really cool, so I can add them to my tree.
Very cool. And if you could, you get to visit her, then you could take like square on pictures, and then we can use them in the magazine, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, my mum visits her every year, so I'll send her down with with an itinerary.
Yes. Yes.
It's been really cool to actually be able to see. I've actually got a picture of Marianne Taylor, which might now be the oldest picture I've got. So far.
I remember when you stopped wanting to be a Viking, or you came to terms with the Viking thing, then one of your next things you wanted was
Can I stop you there?
What? You haven't come to terms.
I've not come to terms with it. I'm still holding out for a hero. Anyway, carry on.
But I remember you saying that you wished you had lots of lovely old photos and you really wanted to try and track some down. And the genealogy fairy godmother is helping you out.
Really is, yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
It sort of raises questions for me, though, as well. Because, like, now I've got these pictures. I know you've kind of got to take what you get. But I've got, like, a picture of my... I've got lots of pictures of my granddad. So I could put a picture of my granddad at age 5 or 6 to before he died. And then I've got this picture of Mary... Do you know what I was going to call her? Mary Ann Pickering. Have you heard that name? Mary Ann Wood. But she's really, really old. And it's like, should I try and keep everyone's pictures of the same age? Or I guess it doesn't matter. That's just a weird...
Oh, shut up.
No, it's not weird. So on my tree, I haven't done this, but I did try and collect a picture of everyone as a baby. Obviously, it's not possible ever to do a comprehensive thing like that. But I tried to do that, and I tried to include pictures of people as babies, because sometimes in families, people fall out with each other and people just take against each other, and people, you know, think bad things happen in families and people feel stressed about each other and stuff like that. And I thought, I really like the idea of having pictures of everyone as children, because I sound like a psychologist, because we all start out as children. We all have our little inner child. And I'm kind of saying it in a spoofy voice, but I mean it sincerely, that just to remember that we are just a big network of people, and we were all children, and we are all people who make loads of mistakes, and things go right and wrong, and you might fall out with somebody. It's not the end of the world. You can patch it up again, or whatever it is. So I was trying to get lots of children pictures, and go. Everyone has their journey that they're on in their life. I guess that I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Very easy to make snap judgments about people or their decisions or their circumstances in life and in family history. But the more you know about somebody, and the more you know what they've been through, where they're coming from, then the more compassionate you are about them. Definitely think family history is good for this.
Yeah, well, like if I get a picture of, well, which I've got of Mary Ann Wood and she's an old lady, that's like a preconception then. Oh, she was an old lady. Whereas actually it's not, no, she wasn't an old lady. She was a woman who had a full life and had all these children, a couple of marriages, X, Y, and Z. It influences your thought process. So when you see them, it's going to be, oh, she was old and he was young and lively. And
yeah.
It's tricky, isn't it? But obviously, you have to accept what you give them, because there aren't going to be that many pictures going further back.
I do find this a fascinating topic, because you're in the past, there'd only be a small number of pictures, and they would be taken for more special occasions, like that. You're not going to get snapshots really until the early 20th century, and then. The sorts of photos that get taken do tell a story, and they're taken with intent to tell a story, aren't they? You're taking photos of happy memories or Christmas Day or holidays, and so we're not seeing pictures on the whole of people washing up, or I don't know. Well, sometimes you might get people digging the garden. I have actually got some pictures of some of my family gardening. By the time you get to the 1950s, I've got people gardening. But you only see them in one part of their life, standing there looking tidy, not doing anything. You don't see them sleeves rolled up, working really hard at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night in the chemist they work in or something.
Yeah. No, or engaging in the hobby that they love. They're just this stuffy old person who's wearing these really formal clothes. It's like they might even hate wearing formal clothes because they're just like to slob around. But you obviously don't get that just from a picture. It's interesting. I still do want to have the pictures, and I think I just have to get over the fact that there is going to be a range, and I'll just have to train myself not to judge people based on their age on a particular photograph.
And gradually, as you get more pictures, you can, like anything, you can always change up the profile picture, and the other pictures all get saved in your gallery on Ancestry.
Right. I've not even explored properly how the gallery works yet. So you can save multiple pictures for the same person, but you select one as a profile pic, much like on Facebook or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And then all you need to be mindful of, as I could be out of date on this, but as far as I know, any pictures that you add to the gallery on Ancestry, they can be seen by anyone. So You know, Ancestry is fantastic, as lots of online trees are, at keeping the living details of the details of living people private. So if you look at somebody else's tree and there's a living person on it, it will just say, it won't let you have their names and their dates and stuff. Whereas if you upload photos, for instance, of your children, they will appear in the Ancestry gallery. So someone else, a distant cousin who you've never met, could see a picture of one of your children and go, oh, I've got Nathan's children on my tree, because as a family historian, you're good at tracking down the details of people and knitting them together into a network, aren't we? And then they could add a picture of your child to their tree, which you may be fine with or you may not be fine with, but it's just worth knowing that that's possible. So yeah. I would say don't include details of living people, photos of living people on Ancestry, personally, but do what you want.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I don't think I would do that. I think deceased is the starting block for it.
Yeah, because I do that. I have a little family history website and I only include photos of deceased people. And I use nickname for it for anyone who's living that use their full name. Because it's completely fine. It's completely fine. And then you might do something and they go, well, it's not fine in that circumstance. So I'm like, well, if I just never do it, then we don't have to get into a pickle.
Yeah, it's safer, it's politer, isn't it? Definitely. So I feel like my homework streak's come to an end because I failed at my task, but...
Well, I think if that's making you feel like that, this is a definite situation for doing that little wrap-up, temporary wrap-up note on your research log, moving on. You could start a whole new branch, or you could pick up the threads, any threads you have for those Scottish clues, and branch out into Scotland. That's always fun, having a new place to look for stuff.
Yeah, I am very excited about that. I do want to trace that back and actually get out of Yorkshire for a little bit if I can. It just amused me so much the other day when I did notice it was on the same branch as. Yeah. It's like I thought it was miles away. I thought, oh, I've gone off on a tangent. I randomly picked these guys and got caught in this mystery. Turns out it's the same part of the tree. So
I love trying to save money if I can do. And I'm not very good at ever saving money. But so sometimes if I was going off on a different, I think I've done this once actually, but you can pause your Ancestry membership. So you could just pause it for a month or two. I've said about that before, haven't I? So you just start paying out for Ancestry. And then you could go over to Scotland's People and you're going to be spending credits there to access the material. But I would probably suggest that you don't do that in this instance, because what you can do lots of Scottish research on Ancestry. And even if you don't have access to the census images on Ancestry, then you can get lots of the details. And once you've got the details, then you can go to Scotland's People and you can spend your credits wisely.
Okay, I'm making a note of this. I've just had a quick look and apparently I'm in Paisley, Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Which means nothing to me. Right. But yeah, my mum suggests that it does go all the way back to Orkney, and I don't know why.
Oh, this is how we're going to be related, Nathan.
I could be telling you lies. It could just be a daydream I've had. Yes. It's good though. All the names are changing. I'm getting like names like Agnes appearing and proper Scottish names.
I've got an Agnes. Not that that narrows it down very much. So in the course of my gradually going back through all the stuff that I haven't done for ages, I was back to First World War records again, and I kind of looked at them for a while. So that was interesting. It was on my husband's side of the family, and I was adding in his 2 times great-grandpa who served in the First World War. And it was amazing. You know, when you're in the midst of using records, I find I get quite fluent at them and you learn how to decode them quite quickly and everything else. And then immediately I'd forgotten something. So this guy, he had his army number was prefixed by the letter M. And I was like, oh, I think that means motorized or something. And I couldn't quite remember. And a quick Google, apparently, if it's got M at the start, then it's motorized transport or mechanized transport. And they're part of the Army Service Corps. But I kind of half knew this, but I was also partly a little bit depressed how quickly I needed to refresh myself because I haven't done any First World War for a bit. And so I kind of forgotten that. But then I was like, oh yeah, no, I can remember this. And it's that lovely feeling of decoding military documents.
I'm instantly jealous.
Yes. And then this is where I've got my normal confession. I was all excited.
Oh God.
adding these records, which I hadn't looked at for a while. I found out he was 5'8", which is, says all of the documents, me not doing anything clever. And his chest is 37 inches. And if he takes a big breath, it gets bigger by 3.5 inches, which I think sounds pretty good. So as a runner, that's quite a lot of in-breath, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was happily, like, you know, adding this all to Family Tree Maker. And then when I was adding the source, I was like, wait a minute, there's already a source here for this record. And I was like, what have I done? So I'd obviously, although I keep showing off about how methodical I am, I got halfway through adding a source back in 2020. It's actually on Christmas Eve of the first COVID. That's when I was doing this bit of research. Jim must have said, oh, come and have a glass of wine. And I did, and they never finished off Jim's second time's great-grandpa's First World War service records. And then here we are 5 years later, or 4.5 years later, when I'm finishing it off. So I'd already half added it in. So, oh, dear me. What is it like in family history? It's quite funny, though, isn't it?
It's really funny. Stupid Christmas getting in the way of family.
No, I know. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm going to carry on with my... I can bang on about my adding the details, because I was quite intrigued about this. So in my folder of documents that I had to add to Family Tree Maker, then I had 103 documents that I hadn't got control of, and so we're just sitting there. It's not actually that many. So I have been adding other stuff, as I say, it's going to be interesting. I'm already having a fun time with my to be added to Family Tree Maker folder. So let's have a little fact file and see the shame and which is the worst dates of the documents.
So roughly, how many people are they tied to?
Not that many. I can see some Burkes, some Hallises, some Joneses, some Fosters, some Hastings, some McPhersons, some Smarts, some Spencers. So probably about 7 or 8 little pockets, not individual people. Yeah. And I've got like a marriage from Durham from 1770, and then a bit of a street map from Stirling, and a birth in 1860 in Scotland. So it's completely random, but each thing will make sense. It's all labelled up really neat, so it will make sense.
And when do you think you're going to get back to Mary Ann Pickering? Because I think you mentioned her in podcast number 2, maybe number 2, maybe number 3.
Yeah. Do you know, what do you think I should do? So I feel now I've actually started this to be added to Family Tree Maker folder, and I've added my 7 of the documents, so now I'm down to 101 left to add. I could, because when I add them, I add the document, I write the source citation, and I transcribe it, because that really helps me know what I'm reading. And sometimes I don't know what I'm reading, so I have to just put the little square graphics with the question mark. But I get a lot more understanding out of the record. So it's a time-consuming process. So to add the 7 little documents is over an hour. So let's say they're 10 minutes each. So 100, let's say 100 times 10 minutes is 1,000 minutes, like 12 or 15 hours. So that's fine. So let's say through August, I add all my documents to Family Tree Maker. I can do this. Yeah, a bit of August and a bit of September.
Well, as long as it makes you feel good and don't get too boring, I guess, is the answer.
No, it's not boring. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. But so then I think it doesn't feel like research, because I've already researched it. So it's interesting typing it up, because I spot little clues I hadn't noticed before. But it's not actual research. So Mary Ann Pickering, I could do alongside that, because that will intrigue me.
I reckon I'll find that I'm related to her before you do.
Do you?
No, not at all.
So what I'm trying to find out with her is, I'm trying to find out about her childhood, aren't I? And I've got the same problem as you, that I just can't find her on one of the censuses. And then there's a few... Ancestry suggests she gets her in a muddle with somebody else, and other people have got in a muddle with somebody else. And so what I need to do is, that's why I need to do that reconstruction of the little community of Woolerton in Shropshire to find out all the other people with that name. I think it's going to have to include some of the neighbouring villages as well. Build up those families, rule people in and out.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to dig into other record collections, because potentially there's a question mark over her, who her father was, then she could be, that could be mentioned.
Right.
Like, I don't think it would be mentioned in Bastardy Bonds or whatever, because she is being brought up in a household with the mother and father. So I think it's more like the family were disapproving of the circumstances of her birth. but she was brought up with them. So it's not like the father's gone AWOL or anything. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm guessing. I'm going to find it out, aren't I? Yeah.
Sounds like a lot, though.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do half and half. And each week I'll report on the to be added to Family Tree Maker folder and the Marianne Pickering. Because she has gone on for a long time. And she was one of my starting points of being interested in family history. But my mum showed me the beautiful old embroidery, which had her name unpicked.
Yes. I remember the story. Yeah.
Yes. So it's been like a curiosity factor for far too long. Really, hasn't it? Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. It sounds like something to do in the autumn, though. In my head, it's like, oh, cold autumn night, get a glass of whiskey and get lost in that mystery.
Yeah, and I think you're right as well, because sometimes the Family Tree Maker one is quite a nice little project because it is organised in its little folders and it's all labelled up. So you can kind of dip into it and do 10 or 15 minutes here or there, just adding one or two documents. So it's very nice to pick it up and put it down piecemeal. Whereas when you'll find this as well, like when you've had your research runs, you need to sit down for hours and hours to hold those trains of thought in your head.
Yeah. There's a bit of like momentum as well, isn't there? If you are doing stuff like you're putting your documents together and sorting it out, it does build a natural momentum where suddenly you become a bit more efficient. And then when you go to your research, you find things quicker and it's like, oh, I suddenly know what I'm doing. And I felt really like that for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I felt pretty solid. And then this week, obviously not being able to find the one thing I was looking for, I felt it sort of knocked me a bit. I was like, oh, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And it's knocked my confidence. It's tricky, isn't it?
It is. But I think that's a really, really useful point because lots of us, all of us have brick walls. So I've got a little pile of brick walls. I wrote them all out and I put them in a little blue folder, each one. So like they were organised again. And I felt better about it because they had they were made into an official document of brick wall. But then it does knock your confidence. And lots of people love doing family history. Some people love doing family history. Once they start doing it, it just becomes part of them. And it's not a question of finishing it. It's not a question of giving it up. And then some people will dabble in it, get stuck and feel stuck. And it's very demotivating if you don't know where to go next. So then I've said it, so the third time I'm saying it in this podcast, I reckon you should just wrap up that section. Don't worry about it for the minute, because you're going to go away, you're going to do other research, and even in 2 months' time, definitely in 2 years' time, you could come to revisit the situation. Your research knowledge and know-how and skills and everything will be so much more finessed that you will probably pick up your research notes and go, oh, one, bam, bam, I can do this and the other to help work on this problem. And all of us, at any level, there's some really top-notch genealogists who can't find things like their great-grandfather, and like, well, you should be able to find your great-grandfather, but sometimes the records just aren't going to play ball, and it's not you're doing anything wrong, it's just a unfortunate set of circumstances.
It's just that weird thing, isn't it, where, like for that woman, and I know I went on about it last week, but I found so many documents and I was charting her life really well, and there's just like a 9-year gap in her life that I just don't have anything for. And it might just be like you've said, there isn't the document for it. Weird that I can't find the census, but everything else around it, she might not have appeared in newspapers. She might not have had a job and all these other things. So it's just an oddity, isn't it? It's like, right, okay, I have to give up at this point and move to somebody else. She'll always be there, won't she? So I can put my efforts.
And it's right. It's interesting what you say about her not having a job. I've got a kind of similar but different situation. It's in, I think it's around 1851. And one of my ancestors, he's had a baby, so he's had my direct ancestor baby. I can't remember whether it's my four times great or whatever. It doesn't matter. Grandfather. And he disappears from the records. And he was in Leicestershire. And I find him in Scotland. And you know when you find somebody, you're like, wait a minute, is this really the right person? Because it's so random to find one. Yeah. Person without any other family members in Scotland. And so that took me a little while to feel confident it definitely was the right person. And one of the things which made me realise it was the right person, because in the subsequent census, he moves his whole family up there. So he's in Leicestershire, he's a young man, he's working as a framework knitter. It's a tough time to be a framework knitter. And so he leaves his family and travels from Leicestershire to Scotland, which is pretty brave, I think, to go and get work. And so he's there getting work, and then at some point he goes, right, my employment here is stable enough, and he brings his whole family up. But because she's a woman, then that's it just seems not at all a plausible situation that she would have done that in that period.
Definitely, especially like with all the children that she has to look after.
Unless she left with her parents, but
maybe, and maybe that's why I can't find anyone on the census. So whatever.
And definitely, we both know, and everybody knows, with family history, just because it's not likely and not typical, anything is possible. So I've got my homework. I am through late summer and into early autumn. I'm going to be doing my adding my documents and doing my Mary Ann Pickering project. And everyone will have heard more than enough about the unsuccess of this as the weeks go by. But anyway, I will do it. And then what about you, Nathan? What are you going to do?
Well, annoyingly, I'm going to try and get my tree rating up. I think I'm not going to obsess. No, I'm lying to you. I'm going to obsess about it, but I'm going to do it in a methodical, miniature way. So anytime I do a research session, I'll click my tree rating, take one of its hints and see if I can solve that person's extra bits, get a few more documents in. So I figure if I do that every research session for like 15, 20 minutes, it might slowly just push that score up. But then I do want to do the Scottish McKay line and see how far back I can get with that. Though I have just had a quick glance and I'm already terrified by it all because it's the unknown quantity. As I've said this before, but like getting out of Yorkshire, suddenly all the place names sound different. And what you were saying, it's like placing somebody in a different place to where you expect to find them. I'm a little bit scared of that. So what year do the censuses stop matching up, going backwards for Scotland and England?
So they match up perfectly. So for Scotland, England and Wales, you've got 1841 to 1921 is available.
On Ancestry?
No. So on Scotland's people, you've got 1841 to 1921. And right. On Ancestry, you don't have any of the Scottish images, but you do have transcripts for 1841, I think, to 1901. I'm not sure if they have 1911. They definitely won't have 1921.
Right.
And how you could find out that is just either going to the census collections on Ancestry or go in the card catalogue.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have, for the Victorian period, and you're going to be researching in the Victorian period, aren't you? So you are going to find the transcripts of the Scottish censuses that you need on Ancestry. Once you've definitely got the right people, then you can go on to Scotland's people and spend your 6 credits and not do what I do, which is just go, yes, I'm sure it's right. I'm sure it's right. I've got a hunch about this one. Splurge your 6 credits and then go, oh, it's wrong.
I've got back as somebody who was born in 1830.
So the other tiny little difference is, you know, with the birth, marriage and death records in England, so that starts from the 1st of July 1837, but for Scotland, you're not going to get those formal birth, marriage and death records until the 1st of January, I think, 1855. So you're just a little bit later, just, what is that, 18 years. Oh, my maths. What a progress. 18 years later. So that's almost one generation later, isn't it? One generation, half a generation later. So they start a little bit later. And then before that, you are going to have, the good thing about it is on Scotland's people, they have comprehensive collections of the parish registers. So the baptisms, marriages and burials. Yeah. Whereas in England and Wales, some of the websites at Ancestry or Find My Past have some of the parish registers, but they don't have comprehensive collections. Whereas that's a really nice thing about Scottish research. It's such a comprehensive one-stop shop going on Scotland's people.
Okay. So some new adventures for me then, if I follow this.
Can I reiterate some of the tips that I just think these are like really handy go-to tips?
Please do.
Okay. So one, go to the Family Search Wiki. And once you're getting some places for Scotland, just put that place name into the Family Search Wiki. It's now got something like 150,000 wiki articles. You're very likely to find your ancestor's place. And just read, and it will give you a little overview about the place, and it will tell you which records are available and where, because what you will find with Scottish parish registers, although they're really comprehensively held, like what is available is held on Scotland's people, they sometimes have really poor survival rates. When you get back into 1700s, you might find that the parish records only survive from 1782 or something for your parish, which is gutting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need to know this. So by reading the Family Search Wiki, you're going to get a flavour of what records are available for your place, and you're going to be learning about your place. That's one thing you're going to do. And then the other thing you're going to do is you're going, when you're searching, you're going to keep remembering who else could I be getting in a muddle with? Because when you're in new territory and when you're researching new people, there might be only a couple of people by your ancestor's name, or there might be loads. And having that background knowledge that there's potentially lots of other people to get in a muddle with is just really handy. So you don't draw false conclusions, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, I can remember.
Now, McKay's new to you, so you're like, oh, McKay's, this is nice and unusual to you. But then when you get to that whichever place in Scotland, you could find that everyone down the street's called McKay.
Yes. I'm already hankering to look at side shoots on this, but I think that's because it sounds easier.
Well, and I've got one more thing. I want to ask you this. So you're going to do your fantastic project to improve your ancestry tree rating. And so this is where it gets a bit Alice in Wonderland, but can you keep a research log about what you do to improve your tree rating, how it works, and when your score goes up? Because if I'm really honest, well, maybe I'm saying I don't care about my tree rating just because it's worse than your tree rating. So, okay, well, I don't care about it anyway. I don't think I'm doing that. But it is a good thing to be able to have our tree rating higher. And let's say somebody, one of your DNA matches, if they're looking at your tree, I don't know whether they can see your tree rating. Can't remember if you can see other people's tree ratings, but if they could potentially, then that's going to give them confidence about your tree. So that's it. I mean, you always want to feel, if you're looking at someone else's tree, you want to have confidence in it. You want to have reasons to feel confident, don't you? Anyway, I think other people will find it interesting how you get your tree score up, what that entails. What does that mean?
Okay, cool. I'll try. I should have maybe done this earlier, because like the first time I saw it, it was 9.5. So I have got it up by 2 points. I didn't have any confidence you could actually get it any higher than, is that arrogance on my side? But obviously now I've seen that there's a 9.8, I can go for it. Yes, I'll keep a log and see what happens. I'll come back in 2 months' time and it'll be exactly the same and I'll have just wasted loads of energy. I won't have wasted energy, because it's all it's doing is it's asking me to add more sources to people, particular people on my tray. So yeah, I'll keep a record.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I think it's quite hardcore this session. We've got lots and lots of things to do, haven't we?
We do. And you know what? We're not going to do any of them.
No, we are. I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow. You're going to start a streak.
Definitely. I am. I'm going to start a streak. So with this podcast, I've got 101 documents in my to be added folder. And so I added those 7, but I did have to, I added 7, but then I had to order one more because I had to get that marriage certificate for the man who I hadn't added the side branch. So it is going to be two steps forward, one step back thing. But I'll keep a tally of both. And then gradually over the weeks, hopefully I'll have less documents in the file. I'll say how many more I've had to order to help pad out the ones I've had to make sure it's all kosher and good. But yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So this is week 1.
Nice. And we're holding you accountable, because this is your pledge.
Yes. Yes, this is my pledge. Yes, I love it. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. If anybody's looking forward to the autumn, which might sound gloomy, but when you love family history, it is actually a thing to look forward to, because as Nathan says, it is easier to get on with family history when you've got a good excuse for hunkering inside. Then we've got some really cool courses coming up, so it's worth checking out the Family Tree website. And if you go to www.family-tree.co.uk, go to the button which says webinars, which is a bit confusing, but what it means is our online learning. And in there, we've got some really cool courses. So one is by Dr. Sophie Kay, and it starts on the 23rd of September. And it's all about doing methodical, organized research with research questions and goals and logs. And it's just, we're going to love it, Nathan.
It sounds perfect.
It just sounds so good. And Sophie is, as well as being really thorough, she's also super fun, and she explains things in really memorable, doable ways. So that's definitely worth checking out. So if somebody's looking to set themselves an autumn project and getting their family history better, that would definitely be something to do.